This evening, we're on page number 33 in the lesson book, on page or lesson number 10. I trust we'll make it through the rest of this lesson tonight and probably start the next one, lesson 11. We've been discussing for weeks and weeks and weeks, which I'm not complaining about, and that we've spent so much time because I felt like it's been a great benefit to me on some of these things, talking about what the early church was doing, the new church. And perhaps I haven't stressed this enough with what we've been studying, but basically in those verses, those few verses that we've been looking at after they were saved or after they were baptized, verses 41 basically to the end of the chapter, and after he gives them the warning, save yourselves from this untoward generation or evil generation. And they that gladly received his word were baptized, and the same day there added about 3,000 souls. And this is where we've been spending the bulk of the time. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, fellowship, breaking of bread, and prayers. And we've had extensive discussions on each one of those things, the apostles' doctrine, the fellowship, the breaking of bread, and prayer. And it says, and fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. So that was the fear we were talking about was last week's lesson. And then it says, and that they all that believed were together and had all things common, sold their possession and goods and parted them to all men as he had need. And they continued daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking of bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved. And tonight we'll be finishing up the lesson. We'll be talking about how that they had all things common and how they sold their possessions. And it's a really good concept. That's in that passage there. Question number 10 is where we are to begin this week on page 33. The question says, what does it mean they had all things common mean?
They were willing to share them with each other.
They're willing to share with each other. And anybody had a need, they fulfilled that need in the sharing process. And if you think about it, it's like a family, isn't it? Because even amongst the children, the needs are different, isn't it? No two is identical. No two is alike. You know, Mom, I'd probably get in trouble for saying this. Well, I won't because they won't listen to it. But if they did, I'd get in trouble for this probably. My mom told me one time, she goes, all three of y'all's different. Three of us. She said, y'all all different. She said, you don't require any... You don't require us paying for your college and doing all, you know, a whole list of things that dealt with money. And, of course, that changed later on, but anyway. And then she goes, then your other sister said, we feel like we have to pay for everything for them. Said, they just can't keep a dollar for nothing. It's like we have to pay everything, give them money all the time. And then she talked about the third one, you know, how different, and we were all just different. Nothing wrong with that. We're just different. And they talked about the one, you know, that had to mash your mouth all the time because she couldn't figure out. You'd keep your mouth shut. Don't be talking back. Don't be flapping your lips when you don't need to be. Or as my grandma told my aunt one time, she said, shut up. She said, yes, ma'am. She got another one across the mouth. And she said, I said, shut up. She said, yes, ma'am. She got it again. She said, I said, shut up. She didn't say anything. She was safe then. She got the message. Listen, do what you're told. But anyway, back to what we're talking. Everybody's needs are different. You know, I also thought about this is a concept that we see played out in very few communities amongst or in our country in this generation or in this time. It hasn't been that way in the past. You go back 100 years, this kind of community was what existed all across the nation. What changed? This is the part where I may get in trouble. What changed? And it's real simple. What changed?
Are you going for government, social security, and government involvement?
There you go, government involvement.
Depending on the church and your family.
Yep.
Starting to get free things.
Yep. It started with some, you hear a lot of discussion. You know, you wouldn't have heard this discussion 30 years ago because some of that generation was still living that remembered it, maybe 40 years ago. But, you know, Roosevelt, when he was president, started a lot of these government programs that take care of you.
Substance programs.
And I've even read people that argued that that's why the crash in the 20s, or the, you know, we had the roaring 20s, and then we had the crash through the 30s, and some believe the reason it drug on for 10, 12, 13 years, and it took basically the World War II to get going, was because of these social programs. And they're just nothing compared to what's out there today. And then LBJ with the war on poverty. Actually, if you look at the numbers, poverty was doing this until they did that, and now it's doing this. So it had the opposite effect over time. You had something to say.
I'm a little older than everybody in here, a lot older than you. But when I was a young boy, our neighborhood may have been different than other people's neighborhoods. But if you were going to get up some hay, your neighbors had you come up and get up hay because they would need help getting up their hay.
Yep.
And if they were doing whatever they were doing, killing hogs, whatever, people would help, the neighbors would help because the neighbors would need help. And it wasn't thought of as they're going to need help, it's just that I'm going to help.
Yeah.
See that you get stumped.
That's what you were doing, and people loved doing it.
I've told this story before. There was a lady in our neighborhood, her husband died. And her hay needed to be gotten up. And I don't know whether it was Mr. Henry or Miss Baker Waters got maybe people to help get up her hay. And Daddy had something planned and couldn't go help. So he hired a young boy to take his place, and he sent me. And I said, well, I asked him, I said, am I going to get paid? Are you going to pay me to go? And he told me, he said, son, sometimes there are things that are better than getting paid. And I've always thought about that. There are things that are better than getting paid because you get a self-satisfaction from it. And my father and I differ on a lot of things, but that's one of the things that he taught me that I really appreciate. If you have an opportunity to help somebody, help.
Yeah.
Don't expect anything.
And don't pass that opportunity. Seen that in my grandparents' generation a lot. They helped people put the crops in, like you're talking about, put them in, take them out. Most time it was weather, something happened. It was weather related, so they could put them behind, so they'd end up trying to help them get caught up. But hay, didn't matter what it was, and then later on it'd be with the harvest. I remember them running tractors 24/7. The neighbors come in, some of them did, so they'd run the tractor for 8, 9 hours, 10 hours, whatever, and then somebody relieved them, run it, refuel, and they'd run them for another, you know, and they'd do this 24/7 till the crops is out, keep them getting wet or just whatever needed to be done. And then the same thing, you know, used to have what they call setting up with people, you know, where the neighbors would come set up your mother was, or grandma or whoever was deathly sick, bedridden or whatever, and they'd come in and set up all with them all night so you could go to bed and rest, and then you'd take care of them all day, stuff like that. Also, we had, when we was digging, we had the tater plow. Didn't belong to us, but belong to a neighbor. Every time we dig, but Grandpa wanted a tater plow. So we'd go over to the man's house, go to his barn. He didn't know if we, he never knew we, I mean, they usually told him we was going to come get it. Or, you know, but the way they tell him is he'd see him somewhere and said, well, we're thinking about digging taters in about 3 weeks. We'll come over and get that plow sometime. And so we'd go get it and plow and do all that, take it back. And these are all the examples of things that that I could see them doing. They had things common. They met each other's needs. The thing I see today, or the one example I see today to where it's still a cultural thing that people that live within our country is among about three groups of people. Number one, it's the Mennonites. You see it with the Amish Mennonite community. I have seen it more than once in my lifetime to where somebody was sick. You know, a lot of people think they're anti-doctor. They're not. They're anti-paying for a doctor, which is closer to right, which isn't necessarily true either. But I've seen a time where they had somebody had arm folded backwards, got caught in something, I mean, tore up bad, and they had to go to a hospital to get it fixed. And they'd pool their money together. They'd pool all their money together to pay for it. They'd pay cash for it. Saw that happen more than once. One of them had cancer one time, and so they pooled their money together to pay for the cancer treatments. I'd hate to see. I wonder if that's even possible to do today, because now, you know, some like things are up into hundreds and millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, even into the millions for things like that. But that was a community thing. They pooled what they had together in order to benefit the one who had a need. And that's a good thing. Back to the government thing. One of the studies that's been done, you know, dependence on government has relieved the churches. That's what one of the studies said. Now you don't see churches taking care of people as you once did in our society, which does not go along with what we see in the New Testament here that the early church did. Any comments, questions about that before we move on to the next discussion piece? Yeah, that's a benefit. That's a helper
in
bringing people together. Actually, I said three groups, and I only told you one. I didn't. Yeah. The Muslim people are the other. They band together tightly, as a part of their culture. And then the third one I've seen. It depends on which group you look at. It is the Mormons and Jehovah's Witness. Those two groups, they bind real close to their members, their membership, especially the Jehovah's Witness, and they will pool money together if necessary to help out a member.
Well, it seems like I read or heard something about like the Amish and the Mennonites, where now what they do is they have an insurance agency, insurance that they pool their money into, and you know, it's kind of written specifically for them, like you're talking about big money issues, and that it'll cover.
Yeah, it's kind of like catastrophic,
right?
What we all used to have and got away from. The next part of the question says, did the early Christians sell all their possessions and goods?
The word all is not in the New Testament.
That's right. Some did, some didn't, as far as who did. They did sell possessions. And I've wondered about that when they said it, when the Bible there says they sold possessions, if they sold not necessarily everything they had, but the excess that they had, perhaps. Because it would not make sense if you sold your land and now you have no way to do food, to grow your food, that sort of thing. But go ahead.
Plowing land in
the National Spur. Yep. A couple chapters over, yep.
And they didn't give all that they had. They gave a part. So that makes me wonder if they actually sold everything or the fact that they just lied about what they did.
It says they brought part of the price that they were given for their possession, for their
right.
land. So they kept back some of the money, but they tried to treat it before Peter like, this is all we got for it. And they wanted the glory, but they didn't want to make the sacrifice. And the beautiful thing about this, and this is what I was going to say about the previous question, is neither said any of them that aught of the things which he possessed was his own. You know, that's in Acts 4:32, but that's a very parallel passage to Acts 2 that we've just been reading about. In other words, it was not about boasting. It was never so we could, you know, throw it up in our brother or sister's face later or anything like that. It was something very beautiful and done out of love. Love takes no account of evil, you know. It's not keeping a tally of, you know, how many times our neighbors helped us out versus how many times we've helped them out. Not scorekeeping in that regard or anything to where there would be any boasting of that nature. That would be bad. That would be prideful. But it was done truly through love and out of faith toward God. And you got to imagine the message they were hearing. The kingdom of which they'd become a part of was not of this world. And it's no marvel then that a lot of these Jews sold their land that they possessed. That means the land they possessed had to be somewhat nearby. It's not like they could go, you know, 200, 300, 400, or even 1,000 miles away and sell land, you know, while they're staying there in Jerusalem. This is local landowners. And if they believe what Jesus had to say, Jerusalem and Judea is going to be sacked not too many years from now. And here we have no continuing city, Hebrews 13, but we're part of a kingdom that's not of this world. My kingdom is no longer from here. And this was the message they're hearing, the everlasting kingdom. And so they were willing to give up that, those possessions, those lands that they once held in the highest regard. You know, and that's a beautiful thing that they would take that money, lay it at the apostles' feet and say, we trust the message you're preaching. Do with it what will benefit the congregation, the people that are in need. If people understood how beautiful that is.
And we have to remember, too, that the Jews came to Jerusalem and they became Christians. And I've always had that one of the reasons that they stayed was, like the verse talks about, in 2 Timothy 3:16-17, where it's a ongoing progress as you become a Christian, you hear, believe, and then you find out what all you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it and stuff like that. A person's not a full-blown Christian, so to speak, when they're baptized and become a member of the church.
Yeah, they're not mature. Back to what I think you was saying a minute ago, or was the thought a minute ago, is I'm thinking that they didn't sell everything that they had, but they had a possession. The way that particular passage, the way it reads to me, or comes across to me as I read it, is it'd be like you have your home place, and then you have another spot of land you owned, and so. To me, the way that reads is they had another spot of land they sold because it says a possession, I believe is the way it's worded. And doesn't say all their possessions. Talking about Ananias Sapphira. It doesn't say all their possessions. It doesn't say that. But the point is, in that passage, is they lied about what, they just lied about it. There's no other way around it. They wanted to look good in the eyes of men. And we'll obviously discuss that when we get to that passage. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, this might be off the track, but I just, about being boastful. You know, I have always approached it like this. Like, I always, all my friends or acquaintances, I always hope that they are financially, you know, healthy and good and everything. But, you know, some of this about people being boastful, sometimes I think it's the person that's saying somebody's boastful. Because I know in a lot of my relationships, like when I want to do something for somebody, okay? And so say for, you know, I do something for them. And then it's like dinner or Domino's. And then it's like, oh, well, we got to have you over. Like, no, you know, you don't have to. I mean, you know, I just want to do this. And, you know, and a lot of times I see that it's always they want to do tit for tat. And I'm not a tit for tat person because, you know, when you said your parents said we're all different, some people require more than others, you know, I don't need that. I mean, I just, I don't want to be thought of as being boastful either. But sometimes, you know, I think the person that's actually thinking somebody's boastful, they need to look inside and maybe say, are they really being, am I looking at this right, or do they just want to do this for some good?
Yeah. I think I've mentioned it. Now I know I have. I mentioned it here before about the one of the Muslim proverbs is to truly be happy. One must not be concerned about others.
Yeah.
That's an anti-Christian view.
We are a brother's keeper, as it turns out.
Yeah. And then the other one, which I can't think of the exact quote over out of my mind, but another one of the Muslim proverbs. This one may be an Arab proverb. It's one of the two. But anyway, I can't remember the exact quote, but basically it means you never do anything that benefits you for someone else. So if you get happiness out of giving something to someone, then you must have done it out of selfish ambition, because it made you feel good that you helped them or give them something. And so it's kind of to me, that's kind of backwards thinking.
Well, I do get something out of it. It does make me feel happy because I have time with them.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm feeling happy with them.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And that can be a motivator to cause people to do good, but that shouldn't be the primary reason.
Well, that goes back, it's better to give than to receive.
Yep.
And I think he is probably saying, you're going to feel good if you keep giving. Because doesn't it say the more you give, the more you will multiply?
Yeah.
But I would never do it, you know, I just, you give your feeling.
Especially if we get into the next lesson, whenever the seems that the writer of the lesson here and that lesson is trying to get us to notice that happiness was one of the side results of them sharing everything. That was just a result. Yeah, and it was making a happy community and giving them favor with the people around them, and it's causing good. It's just causing a light to really shine in the community. Yeah, it's positive things.
And that's the only reason I really mentioned that is because, like, Romans 3 talks about where is boasting then? It is excluded by what law? By the law of faith. You know, that prideful boasting. Not feeling happy, because that's something that is a fruit of the Spirit. The joy that we feel from doing a good work, we get to enjoy the fruits of that. And one of those fruits is the joy that we feel from it, and the joy that rests upon our soul knowing we've done something good in honor to the Lord and faith to the Lord. But the boasting part, it's excluded. And that's what's so beautiful about the early church. They weren't trying to outdo each other for prideful reasons. They were just doing what needed to be done to help each other out. And that's a beautiful thing, to see people actually pull together and do that. Whereas you were talking about Muslims and Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses, in their groups, it's expected of them to contribute. It wasn't expected here.
Right, it was all free will.
But like, I'm just saying, like Muslims or Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses, one of the things that they fall flat on their face is they would buy that on their brethren. Testament parallel to this, when the tabernacle was to be built, God allowed the Israelites to make a free will offering to start the building of the tabernacle. And people gave so much that Moses had to tell them to stop giving. Literally. That's what the account says. This is the early church. This is God's tabernacle in the New Testament. God says, I will tabernacle among them. And so you see a beautiful parallel between that Old Testament passage and the free will offering of the early church in helping each other out and growing and maturing in the faith. So there's a beautiful parallel between that Old Testament reference and now.
Mm-hmm.
But that free will offering, it was not binding. No one had to bring anything, but people did it of a willing heart. And that's what made it so beautiful.
Well, if you think about it, that's in line with the Corinthian letter about being given freely.
Yeah.
You know, given from the heart and so forth, and Christian giving. Are we ready for number 11?
Well, what determined?
Oh, okay, missed one. What determined how and how much was parted or distributed?
As they had need.
As they had need. And once again, everybody's needs perhaps were different.
It wasn't for lust, it was for needs.
That's right. Yeah, not wants, but needs. Sometimes we get that confused.
Yeah.
Number 11, at first I couldn't figure, I'm like, why is this in here? And then it got dawned on me the reason why. Mm-hmm.
And he had known, well, his parents and his grandparents and what had happened to them during this period of time. And, you know, he told them about their view on religion. And I was really impressed. I mean, I wish I could have made that one. But, you know, they informed me about it. This is interesting to me with communism and all that.
The first part of the question is why should a Christian study communism? Then he gives seven reasons there why. I guess to me the first question is what is communism? You're going to get, if you ask Google, if you ask Alexa, if you ask,
sound pretty.
So that's right. They are not going to give you the correct answer on the first try. That's on purpose. Because they don't want you to know what it is. I know that sounded like conspiracy for me to say that, but that's the truth of the matter.
Now, are they saying, in the definition, are they saying that everything is owned by the people?
Yes, that's usually the way they start it. No, you're fine. You'll get varied answers, you know, what they try to steer you to when you start looking. I'm talking about the top of the list stuff, looking through these searches. You won't get this with DuckDuckGo and some of them because they're not running algorithms to sort it. You're going to get the most popular first down the other way. So what they're trying to do is steer you to a fascist type idea rooted in communism, and they're also trying to get you to go over to the idea of what they call democratic socialism, which doesn't exist technically by definition, but we've heard that term thrown around for the last few years in our society, democratic socialism, which is full. I mean, which is really Marxist socialism when you go and do what they define it as today.
Democratic socialism, it would be like utopianism, where the people actually vote on that.
Yep.
They want socialism and they want it done. The people vote to have it, and the
Actually, they're not socialist. That's one of the big lies. Scandinavian countries are not socialist. They turned from that about 7-8 years ago. They scrapped that whole system because it wasn't working for them. That's one of the lies that they tell, that Bernie Sanders is noted for. Look at Scandinavian countries. Well, yeah, they're capitalistic. They're not socialistic. They got social ideas embedded in them, but they're not a pure socialistic thing, and they're not pure capitalism. So they're not a good example. So that they're a different type of government.
Okay. So that was the pure definition of like democratic socialism. But what we're experiencing now is what they call mixed economy. It's like, for example, even here we're, you know, capitalistic, but the government does have their hands in like post office and different things. So that mixes us. What sets everything where they put this categories and categories of socialism and things like that? Is how much is the mix? You know, is it 50% communist and then 50% capitalism? You see? But basically, like you said, you're right. It is all a mixed economy. You have to look at the percentages of what the government is involved in and what capitalism they are allowed to have.
Well, back to guide us back to our lesson where we're headed with this, you know, is communism. The comparison here is some people has actually said that what they were doing here was the same thing as communism. The people who's trying to push communism, they like to run the passages like this and say that's communism. It is not, because the first thing we've already pointed out, first off, it's free will. Communism is not free will in its full-blown form. It is not free will. It's what somebody tells you that it is. The only experience I've had with communistic countries, like in person being there visiting, was Tanzania used to be a communist country. It was to the 90s, to where it was finally released back to the people. So some of my first trips there, I didn't understand it the first trip, and I started putting the pieces together. The leftovers of communism destroyed that country, because you had people sitting around, you had people that were not productive, and you had people waiting on somebody to give them something. So the sharing didn't exist. And what brought it to perspective is when I seen this older man sitting on a bucket or something. I don't remember what he was sitting on. He looked at me and, you know, come here. So talk to him, want to know what I was doing and all that. Well, you need to give me money. Why do I need to give you money? Because you're from America and you're rich. I'm like, no, I don't. Yes, you do. Then I figured it out. He was under the old rule. That's what happened. And so basically, they had to have a whole generation die off, literally die off, before it started changing away from that, even though they were not under that form of government anymore. People that say that this example of the early church was communism, they're not understanding what communism is, first off, and second, they really don't understand what the church was doing. This was all free will stuff, first off. And then, I don't know, I hope you read through the next page all those reasonings of why the differences between. I thought that was a good comparison there with the church in Jerusalem versus, communism. First off, you know, the church in Jerusalem was founded on a faith of Jesus Christ, the Savior. Communism denies Christ, because who's the Savior? The government.
If a person would take the time to look, whether you're fascist, whether you're socialist, or some form of communist, if a person would take the time to look, and the people who are supposed to be the leaders, because they say they're more important than this man over here, then they should get the money. And they actually don't share the money of prosperity with the other people. All a person has to do is look at Stalin, Lenin, Castro, you got a couple of people from South America. They had multiple homes, not just homes, mansions. They had, who's the guy that had the birthmark on his head?
Gorbachev.
Gorbachev, after he left office, his thing was cars. And he had multiple. I saw a thing on TV the other day, and this guy was talking about that he went over to Russia after Gorbachev left office, and he rode, it was about limousines, and he rode in some of Gorbachev's limousines because Gorbachev liked cars.
Well, look at some current examples. Xi Jinping. Everything he's got's on the backs of the people, because he's either beat them, killed them, worked their kids.
And same thing is happening here in the United States from some of our political leaders, that they feel that because of their importance, that every social program or whatever charity, whatever, they should get their share.
Yeah, and on the guise of it's what's owed to me. Once again, it's directing the difference in this and the church is Christ is the Savior, not the government. Communism denies Christ. Why? Because he's higher than the leader. They can't, no, that they don't want that.
And that was the same with the Romans and Caesar. Nobody could be higher than Caesar.
Yep. That's usually why those types of governments only last about two lifetimes of a person. 65, 70 years, couple leaders, done. Look at world history. They don't last. The church, that'd be another thing you didn't put in here. He could have put in here too. Another idea is, communism doesn't last. The church is still here. Christians in Jerusalem acknowledge the fatherhood of God, while communists deny the existence of God. That is very true, because they want nothing higher than the leader. The church in Jerusalem had a spiritual and heavenly goal, while communism is earthbound and materialistic. Boy, that's a true statement. Look at the palaces and all the wealth and the cities and all that's built for these leaders. In communism. Then letter D, communism claims to be an organization of society for production. The church in Jerusalem is not an organization for production, but instead it was a great relief measure. As think about that, as people met each other's needs. Somebody had a need, it was met. That was relief. Or I think that's what Bales is saying here. That's the relief. The evidence shows that this was a temporary measure to meet a special need in the church in Jerusalem. Reason we can say that's because we go later in the book of Acts and you quit reading about those things happening. Also, that's an interesting statement, because if you think about the state of the city of Jerusalem at that time, they were under the Roman government at this time. And later on, or over the next, few years, even some of these people's lifetime, they were reading about, the persecution just ramps up, squeezing the church more and more and more. It got squeezed a lot. And because of that, there were probably some needs that had to be attended to because of the persecution, perhaps even physical harm to some. And so they needed others to help take care of them because of the physical harm. And so the need probably was greater and greater for a period of time until God stepped in.
You have to remember too that the Jews came to Jerusalem for the Passover and they stayed.
Yeah, place to stay. Hadn't thought about that. We're running out of time. Boy, the clock got in a hurry after it went to the bottom, past the bottom of the hour. it was an affair of the church and not, yeah, it was an affair of the church and not of the government. Yes. Oh, I skipped one. Probably an important one. It was not compulsory. Love, not cohesion.
Coercion.
I read that like three times before I said it and still said it wrong. Was a motivating factor. It was voluntary. The rights of a private property is expressly declared in connection with this sharing. The right included the right to sell and the right to keep proceeds. While it remained, was it not thine own? And after it was sold, was it not in thine own power? Acts chapter 5 and verse 4, obviously referencing Ananias and Sapphira.
They could have done whatever they wanted
with
it.
It was not a requirement.
They could have said, this is just a portion.
That's right. And it'd been perfectly fine.
We want to give half of this, but to present it as the whole when it's only half.
Yep.
That's when they were lying to God.
Yep. And we read G a minute ago. No one was disfellowshipped, much less killed, or his property confiscated for not selling what he had. Don't read of that. But under communism, such would be the case. If you didn't want to give up your property, they'd just get you out of the way if they wanted it. It was not an effort to place on all the same financial level. It was as every man had need, Acts 2:45, and daily administered in the daily administration, talking about in Acts 6:1, talking about the widows. The churches outside of Jerusalem did not practice it. Dorcas did relief work as an individual, and would have been impossible if all was put in the common fund. The instructions to the church of Galatia and Corinth show that the individuals had control over their own property and profits. Shows that the disciples had their own goods, and all were not the same economic level. The disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. Acts 11 and verse 29. What's special about Dorcas? Besides, she was raised from the dead.
Well, she was.
Or Tabitha.
Full of good works. I mean, they were the ladies that were there lamenting and mourning over her. Were even showing Peter so much of the garments and other things that she had sewn or woven together and had produced as an extra effort in helping those who were in need or who needed clothing.
Yep. So she clothing was her talent, it seems.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the one noted. And so she used it to help others to the glory of God. And I want to add that in there to the glory of God because I'm doing it for the glory of God. If everyone sold all that he began or became a Christian, we would all be on relief soon. But the church would not have had a means to continue to meet our needs. Individuals have to have and use means of production to make a profit in order to be able to give to the work of the church. All I can say, agreed. Good statement there. Well, with what they did in Crimea just a few years ago, it's simply about the same thing. If it wasn't Russian Orthodox, they burned it locked it, jailed it. And so the people, you know, I heard a lot, I've mentioned it before, but I heard from a lot of our brethren over there that got run out. The church is spread out all over the place now because of that, believe it or not. So that's actually scriptural if you think about it. But because of what they've done to Crimea there in Ukraine, old Vladdy, he spread the people, the church members, way out into other parts of the Ukraine because they're fleeing for their literally fleeing for their lives and livelihood because they were not part of the Greek or the Russian Orthodox Church. So there's all kinds of things that happen when the government has too much power over religion.
And that's one of the key problems with communism, is it puts everybody in subjection the attempt is to put everybody on a common level. It doesn't matter how hard you've worked.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if you've gone to school for 10 years to become a doctor. You shouldn't make any more as a doctor or as somebody that's, you know, throwing out the newspapers. What's the incentive to go to school and learn all? There's no incentive.
There's not one.
Before. And so that type of dictatorship, that type of idea is, well, whether you work or not, whether you strive to do something great, you say you're a really smart person, you could be a doctor, you could be a great lawyer or somebody that, you know, could make good money in another way and have a successful career, the incentive is completely destroyed. And so that's one of the terrible things about it. It destroys the motivation to express the gifts that God's given us.
The older man that used to empty my garbage at work, the other place I worked, he did for a long while. He was a chemical engineer, had a PhD. I'm thinking, why are you up here emptying my trash? It's because the country he lived in, they determined because of his age, he was too old to practice, so they just canceled him. That's communism. We've determined you're too old to be productive. He was a smart man too, knew a lot about a lot of things. We had a lot of discussions at times, and all because he was, you know, past the age of like 60.
When you have everything going through one common thing, that's communism, socialism, and there's less production. And I will give you an example. Grocery store the other day. Went, picked up some medication from Norman. It had been called in, it was supposed to be ready. We went, Ramona went in, get in line and get the medication. I went and got something to eat, come back 30 minutes later, went in, Ramona said, well, they don't have it ready. And Norman, they tried to call and couldn't get anybody to answer. Picked up some groceries. I got in line to pay for the groceries. An hour. There wasn't a person in management down on the floor. They had four registers. Nobody running the register. Ramona stood in line to get the prescription longer than I was in line to pay. And she'd had to stand in line two times.
That would be frustrating.
But it's because they've got a procedure where it has to come through. And they have management sitting in the chair somewhere. And you can't answer the phone. They're not allowed to answer the phone.
Wow. So that's like customer service is gone.
It is.
It's gone.
Except for
at
Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
If communism's so great, why does everybody want to come here?
That's right.
Everybody wants to go to a communist country.
That's
why
right.
Everybody flocked to the early church because it wasn't communism. People took care of each other and helped each other out.
And we'll talk about that in a little more detail next week.